You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM. Broadcasting at 158 watts at 105.5 FM. On the World Wide Web at chry.fm. And on the Rogers Digital Network, channel 945.
Racist dude, comrades, I love you. Watch, counter-revolutionaries come through. Enemies within will find you, plug you, let you dig your own grave if you want to. Working folks starving, I can feel the hunger pains. Like my fan Big Luigi, fight the heroin. Comrades can't quit the movement, historic. Underground railroad, laying in the forest, waiting for Harriet. House niggas forfeit, Maoist generals plot, move lawless. While some Africans living in the projects are more bourgeois than Jay-Z and Beyoncé's. Capitalism, colorblind to be honest. Socialism ethical, not just economic. Gaddafi was Arab, socialist Islamic. Comrades, Maoist generals, I promise. Never following, only leaders in the camp. Studying the Philippines, training in Iran. Strategize with Nepalese, laying out the plans. Break bread with Romans, our Italian fam. Better learn to put the mask on in practice. Better do your mask work with the masses. Don't talk about it, just be about it. Make history, don't just read about it. Better learn to put the mask on in practice. Better do your mask work with the masses. Don't talk about it, just be about it. Make history, don't just read about it. Maoist generals put the mask line in practice. Like planets, now align with the masses. From the masses to the masses in principle. Nowadays the cultural revolution lyrical. Maoist lyricists or anti-revisionists. Cadres and mass struggle against imperialists. Can we pull this off in Canada, imperialists? For the working poor, there is no alternative. I don't have the answers, made a few mistakes. You can learn from, so the mass movement makes. People's organizing rise towards higher stakes. Every May Day, red flag, celebrate. Better learn to put the mask line in practice. Better do your mask work with the masses. Don't talk about it, just be about it. Make history, don't just read about it. Better learn to put the mask line in practice. Better do your mask work.
That was Comrade Music by Toronto's own Comrade. More from that artist a little bit later in the show. You're listening to Radio Basics on CHOY 105.5 FM. For years, liberal Canadians have been enticed into supporting the war in Afghanistan with the duplicitous logic that it's either NATO or the Taliban, while the more bellicose and racist among us simply have no qualms against bombing civilians in the name of the war on terror. That NATO has directly co-opted so many former Taliban into the Karzai government is an inconvenient fact for the warmongers in this country, or that NATO-backed ruling government has bolstered patriarchal social relations in Afghanistan, not to mention the unprecedented violence being inflicted upon the people in Afghanistan, are other facts. Most importantly, however, the existence of a growing revolutionary and secular left in the country is completely ignored by proponents of the war and even many anti-war activists, thereby leaving unchallenged the idea that things can only get worse if NATO were to withdraw from the country. This argument would be a dubious one even if the Taliban was the only resistance force in the country. But the growth of a revolutionary struggle in the country shows that political Islam is neither the only opponent to NATO nor the only option for a post-NATO Afghanistan. Our guest tonight is a member of the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan, and he is in Canada for a short period of time speaking about the revolutionary struggle developing in the country. His alias is Fafdar, since it is illegal to be a communist in Afghanistan, and he is on the line with us tonight.
Thank you very much, Comrade, for having me.
I'd like to begin by discussing the occupation itself that has ravaged the country over the last 10 years. I've read that a record number of civilians were killed in 2011 in Afghanistan at more than 3,000. But I also know that, you know, NATO is notorious for misclassifying civilian deaths, including women and children, as Taliban. So to start our interview for today, maybe you can just summarize the effects of the U.S.-led NATO occupation of your country for the past 10 years.
Well, the effects of this occupation has negatively affected the country, definitely. As a result of the ongoing war in the country, there is a 10-year-long war, actually, we should consider it an imperialist occupying war. And it has taken the lives of thousands of innocent civilians. It has destroyed the village agrarian economy, as a result of which Hundreds of thousands of peasants have left their homes, and they are roaming around in big cities, or they have left the country. So it has intensified the popularization of the masses across the country. And one of the other effects of this war that is not being talked very much is the environmental cost of this war. Mm-hmm. The weapons that are is being used by the occupying forces, I mean, you just can imagine that it's releasing different kinds of poisonous chemicals in the air. And we hear from people across the country that repeat in the areas that has been affected by this war, mm-hmm. the number of cases in cancer, birth defects, and several other things that could be related to environmental poisoning of the environment by the ongoing war.
Through the use of like weapons, like depleted uranium weapons,
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And it has also destroyed forestry in many areas, and it has also affected the wildlife quite badly. Mm-hmm. So these are things that the result of this occupying war and this occupying that has not only affected the people negatively, but the environment of the country, the wildlife, and that the disastrous effect of this will continue for centuries to come. We will see bad things not only in Afghanistan, but also neighboring countries will be affected by the bad effects of this war.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming up on International Women's Day in a couple weeks, and you know, women's rights have the banner of women's rights have been waved by many proponents of the occupation in Afghanistan. You know, we saw that after the occupying forces were in the country, the justifications for the war begin to shift or be mingled with the war on terror. We had the importance of women's rights in the country, and much ado has been made of, you know, the school being built here or there, or little girls going to school. But how would you sum up the situation of the women of Afghanistan today, 10 years after the occupation?
You are right on this, that when this war began, actually, they were giving us the justifications of this war to be a war against terrorism. When one of the other reasons that actually was being given from the very beginning, and it has continued until now, is that somehow this occupying war is for the liberation of Afghan women. So the question of a woman has been used to justify this imperialist war of aggression against a poor country. And towards that end, there have been some cosmetic changes in the country. For example, the puppet regime that has been put in place, it has a Ministry of Women Affairs, and there are certain number of women in the parliament. And for a very tiny minority of Afghan women, the situation has changed, mm-hmm. and that is also there to show that there is actually a real policy mm-hmm. of changing the situation of Afghan women. But one should not forget that this tiny cosmetic changes here and there, and especially in major cities, doesn't tell the entire story, mm-hmm. because the people of Afghanistan, majority of them are living in the countryside, and their life has been negatively affected by this war, ongoing war. And moreover, the puppet regime that has been put in place, it's a theocratic, patriarchal regime, which is, of course, oppressing women across the country mm-hmm. through its economic policies, through its political policies and all that. Mm-hmm. And things that many reports are out there that as a result of the ongoing war and also the very brutal and theocratic patriarchal forces that have been put in place, mm-hmm. violence against women has increased. Mm-hmm. There are reports that women, not only, I mean, this kind of house, what do you say, violence by their family members have increased, mm-hmm. violence at the hands of the government forces and the police armed forces of the government has increased, and as a result, there have been many cases of women committing suicide as a result of the brutal anti-women policies of this government. So in short, one could say that the question of women was opportunistically used mm-hmm. to justify the ongoing war and the occupation, but what has resulted actually on the ground, when the condition of women has not changed for the better, but one can make a strong case that as a result of the ongoing war and the occupation, the condition of women has significantly deteriorated, actually.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, referring back to a point you made about depleted uranium and the environmental destruction of the country, the, you know, the stemming from depleted uranium and other such, you know, a toxic environment that's been created by the war, I understand also that the maternal, mortality rate and the infant mortality rate has skyrocketed since this war has started as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a report actually a few months ago in Sketka. It said that Afghanistan is the worst place to be a woman in. Mm-hmm. Afghanistan is the worst country for a woman, and that report was indicating how actually the infant mortality rate and maternal mortality rate is the worst in Afghanistan. So women in that country has a lower expectancy, life expectancy mm-hmm. than men, while actually the international average is different. And women has a higher life expectancy internationally, but in Afghanistan, women has a lower life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
So all this indicates actually that, yeah, true, this war has affected the life of women very badly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fafdar, last December, the occupation forces gathered in Bonn, Germany, you know, with some token Afghan representatives to host a second major conference to plan the future of the country. You know, 10 years after the first Bonn conference, you know, revealing in pretty naked terms that Afghanistan, you know, not only was a colony at the time of that first conference, but remains one under this NATO occupation. Can you summarize what were the results of this conference and what we are to expect in the coming years stemming from the occupation?
Well, the first Bonn conference that was organized in 2001, what it did was actually, as a result of that conference, the puppet regime that is in power, that this regime emerged there. Yeah, Hamid Karzai was handpicked as the head of the puppet regime in the first Bonn conference. So that conference outlined the current 10 years of the ongoing war. So the second Bonn conference mm-hmm. also outlined what would the situation of Afghanistan look like in the coming years. One of the things I think that the two Bonn conferences indicate is the hypocrisy of the imperial powers in regard to Afghanistan. They were saying, I mean, they were justifying as their war to be a war for bringing democracy and for war against terrorism and the question of liberating Afghan women. But the two conferences actually, what they do indicate is that the imperialist powers are more interested in the geopolitical nature of this country. So they are, mm-hmm. they want to use Afghanistan as a military base for controlling the planet. It's part of their project of a military grab of the planet in Afghanistan, having a very sensitive geopolitical situation, is being used as a military outpost.
Yeah,
so the second yeah. Bonn conference somehow was for this purpose of paving the way that Afghanistan should be used as a military camp, mm-hmm. a military.
So getting beyond these, justifications and excuses that are given for the war and the occupation, you know, Taliban, saving women, there are these major geopolitical interests at the heart of the occupation. Can you describe what these are and what the interests of U.S.-led imperialism is in the country?
Well, Afghanistan has always been geographically very important for dominating Asia, actually. That was in the 19th century. The British Viceroy in India was saying that a war in Afghanistan is a war in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to dominate Asia, so this country is of key geographical importance because it's right in between Central Asia, South Asia, and Western Asia, which is the Middle East. So if you would have a military presence in this country, if you control the land and the air in this country, mm-hmm. it means that you are militarily in a better position vis-a-vis your enemies or whatever. So having a military presence in Afghanistan means controlling Central Asia, which is historically the Russian sphere of influence.
Mm-hmm.
And also there is a rising China. Yeah, so you would be having right, the strong military presence just right in here. So for the entire purpose of this war and this occupation, and the two Bonn conferences have revealed that they are not interested in anything, because there is no real project for improving the condition of women. There was and there is no real project even for building a liberal democracy.
Yeah.
But there is all kinds of arrangements and all kinds of preparation for having a strong military presence in the country. So right now the Americans have a long-term project of having three military bases in the country, which covers huge swaths of land and several parts of the country. And all things indicate that the buildup of this military camps in the country is going to be for a very long time to come. Mm-hmm. But this is roughly what the situation looks like.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really glad to be speaking to a partisan like yourself, somebody who has a very clear position, who represents an organization that is in struggle, because one of the arguments, a fallacious argument that lends ideological support to NATO's occupation, is the idea that it's either NATO or, you know, a terrible, you know, Islamic fundamentalism, Taliban. But your organization has been contributing to the development of a revolutionary, secular, leftist resistance in the country. Can you tell us a bit about this resistance overall, you know, including the Taliban, and particularly your organization's position within that and contribution to the struggle?
Well, wherever there is oppression, there is, of course, definitely resistance to it. And Afghanistan has a very long history of resisting imperialist occupation and imperialist wars of aggression. When this occupation began in 2001, actually, in the month of October, when they started the war against the people of Afghanistan, very immediately there was opposition to this war and this occupation within the country by secular leftist and imperialist forces in there. And at that time, one of the parties that took a very clear position was the Communist Party of Afghanistan, actually, which was one of the parties that later on joined a few other groups that formed the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan. So from the very beginning, the communist forces, the Maoist forces, anti-imperialist, internationalist forces came out against this occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And then in early 2000s, they also said that given the needs of resisting this occupation, what needs to be done is to unify the Maoist, communist, and anti-imperialist, internationalist camp in the country to put up, actually, a significant resistance against the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So given the very sensitive nature of the conditions in the country, that there is a very strong Islamist resistance going on against this occupation,
yeah,
and these Islamists have their allies from across the world, people coming from this Islamists from China, from Central Asia, from the Middle East, even some Westerners are supporting them.
Yeah.
And the puppet regime and the occupation has also an international camp. So the two sides are there.
Yeah.
But there is also the leftist forces present in the resistance. Unfortunately, the anti-imperialist, internationalist, communist resistance to occupation doesn't have emerged as militarily significant.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been there. It has been in the student movement. It has been among the women's movement and the workers' movement. There have been ideological and political resistance to the occupation, which is actually has some significance to it. Definitely, it is preparing the political and ideological environment against the occupation. So I would say that the internationalist and imperialist forces have been present in the forefront of struggle against the occupation in different shapes and forms: strikes, demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
In political propaganda within Afghanistan and also out of it.
And certainly this can't be an insignificant thing. I understand it's illegal to be a communist in Afghanistan, and certainly the occupation forces and the puppet government would have great cause to fear your work and your existence.
Definitely, the constitution of the puppet regime has been worded in a way about the presence of political forces to outlaw the presence of communists in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That makes things very difficult for revolutionary and communist forces in the country to organize and to build up their mass communist-led mass movement. But we have been in this country for a very, very long time. The communism, the presence of revolutionary internationalist forces is nothing new. So we know our way how to work around it. But it's a very difficult circumstances, definitely. We are facing extreme repression from both sides, I mean, nonetheless.
Yeah.
So we do consider that the principal enemy, the principal enemy of the peoples of Afghanistan currently is the puppet regime and supported by the imperialist occupation.
Let's speak a little bit to the history of communism in Afghanistan, communist forces in Afghanistan. I imagine that a lot of our listeners listening to the show right now are saying to themselves, well, I thought, many Afghanis were very opposed to communism, you know, given the Soviet invasion and occupation in the 1980s. Kevin, can you give us a little bit about a little bit of background about your movement, the Maoist movement in the country, its origins, the position it took in relation to the occupation of the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, and you know, clarify what I'm sure is a lot of misunderstanding or confusion or conflation between that occupation and maybe what your organization represents.
The history of Maoist movement, of the communist movement, I should say, goes back to 1960s in Afghanistan. In 1965, an organization was formed. It's famous as the Progressive Youth Organization. And under the leadership of the Progressive Youth Organization, a mass democratic movement emerged in the country. But actually, in the history of this country until now, a mass movement like that have not emerged. Only Taliban could be compared as the one of the biggest mass movements. But nonetheless, this mass movement that emerged in the 1960s is the precursor to our current communist movement in the country.
Mm.
In 1978, when there was a pro-Soviet military coup by the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan, as a result of that military coup, the Soviet Union intervened and occupied the country. And the pro-Soviet puppet regime of the time, led by the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan, started a campaign of eliminating the Maoist movement and the revolutionary communists.
Uh-huh.
As a result of which, thousands of our cadre, the cadre of our movement, was killed. Among them was the leader and the founder of our movement, Akram Yari. Uh-huh. All of them were arrested, and no one saw them anymore. They all disappeared, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they were just killed and put down in mass graves, but no one asked about that later.
Yeah.
And what also happened was in the 1980s, the Maoist movement was decapitated, it was significantly weakened, and there was also a right-wing economist line emerged within the Maoist movement, which followed the line dominant in the Communist Party of China. The Dengist line, one of the organizations there that I would blame for that is the Afghanistan Liberation Organization. But nonetheless, there were several Maoist groups emerged in the 1980s that actually was fighting the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And these forces also made some blunders, some mistakes, some of them joining actually the Islamists and following the Islamist line in the 80s, actually. One thing that I would underline and I would emphasize is the Maoist forces in the 1980s was in the camp of resistance against the Soviet occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 1990s, that what we consider is the birth of the new communist movement of Afghanistan. And what they did, a few circles emerged there, and they summed up the experience of the communist movement in the country, and they reached to this conclusion that one of the mistakes there was that there had existed an organization and ideological liquidationism within the Maoist movement, which practically meant that in some cases following the Islamists. So as a result of that summation, the Communist Party of Afghanistan was formed in the early 1990s. Then that party had actually did a good amount of work. It was a member of Revolutionary Internationalist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few other organizations. One was the organization for the struggle organization for the salvation of Afghanistan, and Workers Revolutionary Organization of Afghanistan. All three were Maoist groups. And in early 2000s, in 2001, when the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan began, the Communist Party of Afghanistan called on other Maoist groups to come together and unite in one party.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of which, in 2004, the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan was formed as a result of the unity of the three other Maoist groups. So several Maoist groups over the years have joined this party. So right now, the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan, I would say, is the largest leftist revolutionary camp in the country.
Mm-hmm. Fafdar, you'll be touring Canada in the coming couple weeks to talk about, you know, to provide more information, to talk to some audiences about the resistance in Afghanistan. And, you know, basicsnews.ca will try to publicize some of these events on our website. By way of conclusion, is there anything else that you would like to say to our listeners, perhaps on the link between the, you know, anti-imperialist resistance in Afghanistan and the struggle of workers and oppressed peoples in Canada, especially considering Canada being an occupying military within the country?
Thank you very much, comrade. This is your show, in the kind of work that you are doing, and also kind of support that you are providing to the revolutionary movement in Afghanistan, is an example of international solidarity that actually we all need. Oppressed peoples, the rich of the earth, needs the proletarian internationalism. We need to support each other's movement and the resistance against oppression in different parts of the world. We view the Canadian proletariat, the oppressed people in Canada, the oppressed nationalities in Canada, as part of our strategic allies in the global fight against imperialism and against oppression. What we think, the last thing that I would say is this, that the Islamists have their international coalition in Afghanistan, the imperialists occupying that country. They are also the ruling classes of the world is united. They are all supporting, they are giving significant support to the puppet regime. The oppressed peoples of the world and the proletariat, the revolutionary forces, should do the same thing. It means extending support to the resistance, because we should view that the fight in Afghanistan is part of the global struggle against capitalism and imperialism, and the struggles ongoing in Canada. We view them as part of the same struggle that we engage in Afghanistan.
And, you know, on that point, I would add that, you know, as a people's media organization that, you know, as also anti-imperialist and links up with people's struggles all across Canada and all across the world, you know, oppressed nationalities in Canada, oppressed nations, I should say, workers who are having their wages cut, their benefits cut, you know, there is a direct link between, for example, the austerity programs that workers here in Canada are facing, declining wages, attacks on the social wage, and the increased military spending, which is leading to the attacks on your people in your country, who I would boldly say, you know, are our brothers and sisters in struggle, you know, for a better world. So, you know, on that note, Fafdar, thank you very much for being on Radio Basics, and, you know, we obviously stand alongside the struggle for the liberation of the people.
Thank you very much, comrade. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Fafdar. That's an alias. He is a supporter and a member of the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan. As he said, one of the largest, you know, anti-imperialist and resistance, revolutionary and communist organizations in Afghanistan. So next to the Taliban, the Islamist forces, which actually goes by the name of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, the Communist Maoist Party of Afghanistan is the largest militant resistance group struggling against the occupation for the liberation of the country from NATO and its puppet regime in the country, the Karzai regime. Radio Basics, we're going to be right back after the commercial break. We'll have some more music. And at the end of our show, we're going to be talking to Justin Panos about the Drummond Report released last week. Stay tuned to Radio Basics and hear about some of the attacks that are going to be made on workers and people right here in Ontario. Check it out, Radio Basics.
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM during African Liberation Month. Listen, discuss, celebrate.
What I'm cooking up lately, building hood to hood with Chucky for the babies, bringing light to the dark, half the streets hate me, knocks in the park after dark, shit crazy, gunshot wounds slash faces like 80s, the other half out raising funds not for 80, but baby food pampers, nails for ladies, liquor, a few cancers, bring the AIDS cheese, blood money, VO, war report take me, Von Roe flooded, hair on blow, great weed, Von Roe thugging, young adult late B, it's no longer safe out on the strip lately, who's beefing who, why crews beefing crews, like why son raised two seeds beefing stew, I'm coughing from Cuban cigars often, all praises due to Mala for the boxes, thesis and price, king's crown with loxes, life, the roll of a dice, my fate like pockets, M1 immortal technique, cannibal oxes, radical, when I speak cannibals rock this, Hannibal, Fidel Castro, beat the odds with intelligence, socialism my element, 21st century rap, irrelevant, bring it back to the Wu era, stop selling kids pipe dreams, harm reduction kids for pipe fiends, hood to hood, unified blood crip, white teens in B-Town, Six Nations youth while he's down, only sell oxy so long before he's found, Reese's Pieces, up top, B down, see polices, look for budget increases, Queens of Egypt, take back the plane and sleeping, hood to hood fails, it's okay, try again, lay low for a while, before we rise again, by then, bloods will be wiser men, new recruits like streets keep hiring, hood to hood fails, it's okay, try again, lay low for a while, before we rise again, by then, bloods will be wiser men, new recruits like streets keep hiring, hood to hood fail, it's okay, try again, lay low for a while, before we rise again, by then, bloods will be wiser men, new recruits like streets keep hiring, hood to hood fail, it's okay, try again, lay low for a while, before we rise again.
That was the artist who goes by the name of Comrade, hood to hood. Last week, former TD Bank chief economist Don Drummond and the head of the Commission on the Reform of Ontario's Public Services dropped a 665-page report calling for harsh austerity measures and cuts in Ontario. Cuts in privatizations not seen, and perhaps even harsher than under the provincial government of Mike Harris. These cuts will be especially felt in healthcare. Joining us tonight on the line is Justin Panos, a PhD candidate in the Political Science Department of York University and a former member of Radio Basics team here on CHRY. Justin, man, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be back, Steve.
Yeah, man. So I know you got a forthcoming article in the publication, The Bullet, entitled Drumming Up a Healthcare Crisis, a clever little allusion there to the notorious author. Contrary to what we've been hearing about in the corporate media, you put forward the argument that much of this crisis is being fabricated and that Drummond's so-called hard answers are being given to an entirely false set of problems. How would you say that this current budgetary crisis is fabricated?
With
respect to healthcare, if you want to speak more broadly, you can.
Right. Good question. The reason why healthcare made up such a big portion of this report, it's what they begin with. It's where he recommends the deepest cuts and the reining in of so-called overspending. The reason was because for everything that Harris did, he was never able to cut the healthcare budget. He was able to close 1/6 of all hospitals in the 1990s and restructure it and begin and install privatization and begin the trend. And I can talk a bit more about that. But he was never able to successfully cut the healthcare budget for various reasons. One, because simply we need healthcare. Now, why I say this is fabricated is partly the reason why they needed Donald Drummond in the first place. There is, in Canada, an amazing collection of stats, of policy wonks, of databases that actually show that there is no crisis. And, you know, had McGuinty just taken those reports, there would be nothing for him to base the austerity on. And when I say that, one such example is the Canadian Institute for Health Indicators. It's in Ottawa. It's a nonpartisan. It doesn't recommend policy. It's just simply wonks and databases and number crunchers. They say that healthcare is entirely sustainable. And they also break down one of the most, I think, fallacious and grievous myths that is made, is that the aging population is going to put strain on healthcare. This is just simply rude to blame elderly people. It's a form of ageism to say that they're the source of the problem. An aging population is actually an indication of a successful healthcare system, and in some measures, a successful society. Now, in every report they've released in the last 10 years, age is modest to irrelevant in terms of rising costs. It's trumped up very cheaply and very easily by politicians, and it lends itself very easy to politicians who can say, you know, everyone's getting older, which is true, and it's raising costs, which isn't true. But it's somewhat intuitive to say that, and just most simple analysis proves that it's not true.
Mm-hmm. You know, you quote directly from two separate sections of the Drummer Report in your article to produce the phrase, the healthcare system is costly, you know, quote unquote, and the system isn't as public as most people think. And this is the title of one of your subsections. What are you getting at? What you seem to be getting at here is that previous rounds of privatization are to blame for the costs that are actually rising within the healthcare system. Can you explain this process?
Yes. So the one section says that healthcare is, in the Drummer Report, under his own sections, one section is the healthcare system is costly. This is true. In the entire developed Western countries, Canada ranks sixth highest. Then in a separate section, he says that our system isn't as private as we think it is, which is also true. It's probably paid for about 70% from the public purse, 30% from the private purse, being both
user fees, like
user fees, out-of-pocket payments, and insurance, and you know, coincidentally enough, Donald Drummond, who worked for TD Bank for 10 years, got a plush job. TD is also trying to break into the insurance market in Canada. Now, the two from my report, and also from the Ontario Health Coalition, which has done an amazing study on this, which you can get from their website. Yeah. Just simply Google Ontario Health Coalition and it'll come up. Is what is actually driving costs is two things: privatization and a tax loophole in the employer's health tax, which I'll come back to. I want to talk about privatization for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Let's take the long-term care sector, which is related to obviously elderly people. It has been the most privatized section since the Harris years. So every time you hear about a new round of beds being opened up for people who need long-term care, which is elderly people who can't stay in hospitals but need some type of care. So it's a residential home where you have nurses on staff. This has been totally infested by multinational corporations, one of which is Extendicare. Now, one of Harris's commissioners on privatization, while in that capacity, went to Extendicare, and then from Extendicare, McGuinty handpicked her to be the head of sector, or his cabinet secretary. And this just shows sort of the business, government, consultant sort of trichotomy that's really the source of problems for healthcare. Now, what happens in long-term care is that no matter if it's a for-profit institution or non-for-profit one, it's all subsidized by the government.
Yeah.
Now, in the for-profit, and it's subsidized at about $155 a day from the government, and around $50 a day by the user. Now, what's happening is the for-profit corporations are turning the subsidies into profit. And they're doing this by downsizing staff, by manipulating the funding envelopes, and simply by preying on the fact that there's not transparency in the system. Really, if you could just make the system a bit more transparent, you could find out where that money is going and redirect it into frontline care.
So, which is to say that previous rounds of privatization, particularly in old age care, is a large part of the cause of the rise in healthcare costs.
That you've, absolutely,
you've introduced the profit motive. So, above and beyond the costs of healthcare, you have people getting rich off of
exactly. And you know, everyone that says we should have more public private sector support for healthcare has never ever sufficiently explained to anyone how the introduction of shareholders and marketing is going to save costs on anything. That those are you know, more business outlays and obviously profits going to the shareholders, which could be put into frontline care. There's an insurmountable amount of studies done showing how different nonprofit and for-profit residential homes are. For-profits, mortality rates are inordinately high. The quality of care is a lot lower than its nonprofit counterpart. And at the same time, staffing levels are much lower in for-profit. So it jeopardizes. And when you do that, then you're actually putting more pressure on the healthcare system, right? Because you're withholding care that these people need and, you know, exacerbating their condition, et cetera, and waiting until these people actually get sick instead of having nurses on hand, preventative care, and helping people maintain a healthy lifestyle.
But it's more efficient, Justin, is it not, to not
well,
keep
that,
people...
You know what? If that were true... It might be a persuasive argument, but is in fact very inefficient.
I meant a more efficient maker of profit, not making people healthy.
It is. And, you know, a lot of these, the residential homes, I should add, they're multinational corporations, but they're also real estate investment trusts. So when privatization occurs, right, these big multinational trust funds are able to scoop up capital assets from the public, right, at very low cost. Sit on them until they go high, and then they can sell them for profit. I should add one more thing with the Ontario Health Coalition. Hugh McKenzie of the Ontario Health Coalition did a study, and this is in the Ontario Health Coalition's report, on the tax loophole.
Yes, the second part of the argument.
Yeah, so the employer's health tax means that if you have a payroll of, you know, over $400,000, you know, every pay cycle, and you also have... a certain amount of people. If you're a very big corporation, essentially you're going to contribute more to the healthcare system.
Yeah.
Now that's tax. That's on the books, and so actually it's not being enforced. In fact, Hugh McKenzie calculates that $2.4 billion is lost since its introduction, and that's going to make up a big chunk of the deficit and help healthcare spending. And you know, looking at that, you realize what the source of Ontario's deficit crisis is. It's the deficit between what the rich pay and what they ought to pay.
And that's another part of the argument that is kind of driving the austerity offensive. You know, one of the ideological underpinnings is that we have this large deficit, the cause of which is not really described. Suddenly, we're told that it's things like healthcare and education that are the result of these massive deficits. And when I look across Canada, it seems like at the federal level and the provincial level, those deficits just appeared almost out of nowhere in the last couple of years.
Right.
So I know, I mean, this is not the topic of the article that you've written on, but as a student of political economy, you know, as a PhD student in political economy, do you have any thoughts? I've tried to wrap my head around this itself. It's incredibly, you know, obscure what exactly has happened, where these deficits came from. Do you have any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, I can tell you one thing. Opposite of what's been happening in America, Canada's becoming more decentralized. So the provinces are gaining more power as time's going on. As opposite you hear in the United States, the states themselves are losing power and the federal government's becoming much stronger. So when that's happening, the provincial government is really where the rich want to target. Basically, Harper's remade Canada into the federal government is just concerned with foreign policy, which you know, obviously went over in the first part of your show, buying fighter jets and things like that. And the provincial governments are really where businesses are going to target. And what they're doing is they're effectively able to make the working classes of Canada start to support themselves in terms of healthcare system. So they're able to elude the tax loophole, or the tax, they're able to elude the tax through the loopholes, right? And effectively not have to contribute to the system. And then when they get sick, well, they can just go hop on a plane to America and get the treatment that they want.
So it's so de facto,
as, you know, working, yeah. So basically, as working class incomes are going down, right, that's killing the tax base for the public sector programs that we need and rely on. So it's not even, you don't even need to levy any new taxes. You just need to enforce the ones that we've got.
Mm-hmm. Which would make, right? Make a substantial difference, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's a starting point, at least. And I think it's a modest and an important demand.
Mm-hmm. Justin Panos, man, thank you so much for being on the show with us. You know, we're always happy to have you on. And we'll look forward to your work. Hopefully, we'll reproduce that piece that you have coming out in The Bullet, which it can be found at socialistproject.ca. And look forward to future contributions as well.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for having me.
All right, Justin. Have a good night.
You too.
That was Justin Panos, former member here on Radio Basics. He's written on the Drummond Report, which was dropped last week. You can find his publication at socialistproject.ca with the publication The Bullet. Radio Basics, that's all we have for the show tonight. Stay tuned. We got Every Day I Have the Blues coming up next with Vince. And for the rest of the show, let me take you out with a little more music from Comrade. This is The Elements. Radio Basics will be back next week. We're here every week, Mondays, 8 to 9 p.m. Check us out here on CHOY 105.5 FM. And for our print and online productions, you can check us out at basicsnews.ca. And if you want to get Basics at your door, if you want to help distribute the Basics print edition throughout your neighborhood and your workplace and your school, contact us as well, basics.canada@gmail.com, basicsnews.ca. That's all we got for tonight. This is Comrade, The Elements. We're out.
A wise son dedicated to the elements. Water spits fire, earth wind, dead presidents. Most high, spinning James Blood, true militants. True red, Shiloh and Jeeks brought me into this. Von Road Res on 6-9, no coincidence. With Quan Che, like the Minicano rhyme, eloquence. School of Hard Knocks, graduated with excellence. Can't forget Butter, Heartless G, Elephants. On the oak, wood, concrete, and the internet. 2012, streets rep intelligence. From the global shift, consciousness, melanin. Upway, homeway, unite with Latin American. Lyricism, culture clash, capitalism. We rap, but our ancestors have the vision. Connect the dots from within, truth is risen. Proof, the temple of hip-hop is lit. So we pack the bags in the Navigator, bruh. At sundown, cruising to Lower Canada. East to West Coast, legacy and train. Fuck hanging on the block, doing the same old thing. This be big thing, something like a all-beat tour. Country's big and beautiful, so we choose to explore. Breathtaking, the endless mother nature passing. Hip-hop blasting, every spoken drinking and laughing. At 190, through the natural scenery. Feeling the cool breeze, blowing the greenery. Ridges and cliffs, with waterfalls like a fountain. Blue sky, white clouds, sunshine and mountains. B-boy gear, yeah, we some true hip-hoppers. Passing best of feet in Canada has to offer. You didn't know, like this North Pole, Inuit flow. Aboriginal, ancient like a totem pole. Not here, store the true story of this last day of members. Maybe that's for on Remembrance Day, I don't remember. So I'm on the national anthem, but still watch hockey. Wearing red, black, and green instead of red and green. Poppies, poppies, poppies. We'll be right back.
track is the Gaddafi anthem. G20, hit hard, save pennies. Class warfare, no time to drink Henny. The bourgeoisie raise hell, running empty. PPW ants, we got plenty. For state violence, raised by slaves from the islands. My slave generation, don't behave wildin'. So 13, 12, 31, division iron. Wait until we organize, fight, stop whining. Petty crimin', fake, dime a dozen rhyming. Maoism the key, brought by the wise men and wise women. Red diaper baby children, the blood's got it wrong, red communism killing, ruling class, capitalist bureaucrats, white panthers, black panthers, my crew is stacked, gang related, political crime on slave ships, public enemy to the fascists and racists. Mao's red book is right, the green book is wrong, we need a revolutionary party strong, this is dedicated to Gaddafi now gone, millions move the struggle forward, stay on. Mao's red book is right, the green book is wrong, we need a revolutionary party strong, this is dedicated to Gaddafi now gone, millions move the struggle forward, stay armed. Struggle never ends, barely has begun. We need to read up Lenin, what is to be done? Why? I ask my third eye, what's the reason? To please them, who? The ancestors breathing through us, China, Nepal, North Korea grew us for class warfare many seasons. The Green Book is wrong, some committed treason. So, a Leninist vanguard is needed. 40 years after socialism for heathens, anti-Gaddafi Libyans robbing, stealing $160 billion from the region. Wealth of the Jamahiriya, they'll be needing every cent back from gold reserves leaving. Libya for US, France, Canada, even. Gaddafi was right, the Green Book was wrong. So, a revolutionary party forms. Africans, Asians, Latinos, Islam. Six nations, white workers come along. Multinational, working class, stay calm. Now it's generals, make the blueprints long. For the class war, race war going on. With women's liberation, so women right wrongs. Freedom only come from the gun on our arms. Well, spiritual rebirth on the planet's going on. Mao's red book is right, the green book is wrong. We need a revolutionary party strong. This is dedicated to Gaddafi now gone. Millions move the struggle forward, stay on. Mao's red book is right, the green book is wrong. We need a revolutionary party strong. This is dedicated to Gaddafi now gone. Millions move the struggle forward, stay armed.